alabaster jar of expensive perfume made from the essence of nard. She broke open the jar and poured the perfume over his head. Some of those at the table were indignant. "Why waste such expensive perfume?" they asked. "It could have been sold for a year's wages and the money given to the poor." So they scolded her harshly. But Jesus replied, "Leave her alone. Why criticize her for doing such a good thing to me? You will always have the poor among you, and you can help them whenever you want to, but you will not always have me. She has done what she could and has anointed my body for burial ahead of time. I tell you the truth. Wherever the good news is preached throughout the world, this woman's deed will be remembered and discussed." I think there's a trap you can fall into with this verse. It's certainly a trap I fell into when I first read it, which is that it seems that Jesus is saying here, "Screw the poor, I'm important, whoop-de-doo, go me." Which is really not what he's saying. And if you look at Jesus' ministry, of course he's not saying that the poor are less important or we shouldn't help the poor. And I think the reason this trap is there is because Mark is very general. He talks about a woman pouring perfume and he talks about some people being indignant. Luckily, the other Gospels talk about this story as well. And if we look at John, he sort of drills down a bit more to the specifics. And we learn that this woman is in fact Mary and some people John names as Judas. And suddenly the story becomes a bit more clear because we've got a story where Mary is doing something for Jesus and someone isn't getting it. Which is very similar because we've heard that story already. When Jesus visits Mary and Martha, Martha is busy preparing a feast for Jesus, going around sorting the house out, tidying up, that sort of thing. And Mary is just sitting in front of Jesus, listening to him. And Martha comes in and says, "Jesus, surely Mary should be helping me. I've got so much work to do and there's so much to get ready for this feast. Surely she should be giving me a hand." And Jesus says, "No. Mary knows what she's doing. She's found the thing that is true and she is holding onto it and no one's going to take that away." And it's the same with this story. Mary does this act of devotion and generosity to Jesus because her relationship with him is more important. And that's what it's about, her relationship with him. And this time, instead of Martha not understanding, it's Judas who doesn't understand. Now, Judas also has some other ulterior motives. He is the treasurer for the disciples. He is a very frugal man, and as every good accountant, he keeps track of the money. But Judas also cares a bit too much about money. And when he says, "This jar, you know, it's worth a year's wages, surely we should give the money to the poor," John goes as far as to say that he does not care about the poor when he says that. And the reason he says that is because he sees this waste of money. He sees this perfume being poured over Jesus, this anointing, as a complete waste of money. And he can't stand that. Because money is what gets Judas going. Judas is bribed with money. Judas looks after the money. He embezzles money that he looks after the disciples. And money is this barrier that gets between him and Jesus. And you see Mary, and you see that nothing gets between her and Jesus. Whereas Judas, money constantly gets between him and Jesus. And that's what this is about, I think. This is about the relationship we have with Jesus, and not necessarily the things that we're doing. If we look throughout the Gospels, we see Jesus reprimanding Pharisees for many things, but specifically for doing things without actually meaning them, for clothing themselves in sackcloth, ashes, and going out in the streets and wailing to look like they're holy. And Jesus says that that isn't right, that it's about the meaning behind what you're doing, it's about faith. And again here, Judas is concentrating on the giving to the poor, the fact that we should give to the poor, and not why we should give to the poor, the meaning behind the actions that we are doing. Because the meaning is what matters. The fact that we're doing it out of love for Jesus is more important than what we're doing. Because it's not a case that all of us are anointing Jesus' body for burial. That can't happen. And it's not a case of all of us are selling all of our possessions, quitting our jobs, giving all the money to the poor and living on the streets. The actions that we do are important, but the meaning behind them is what is crucial. And that is what is important in this story. And I think, personally, I believe that we all have a certain cause, a certain purpose, a certain passion that God places on each of our hearts that we are geared towards. Now, for some people, that could be as simple as being an example, being a shining example of Christ in your workplace. being vigilant to see if someone doesn't seem, you know, quite themselves, or you haven't seen them in a while. Just being that sort of kind voice and that friend. For other people, like we've heard, they've got a real calling for mission, for going out and spreading the gospel in places that don't necessarily get it as easy, for helping people who have less of an advantage. And for some people, they have a really great skill of encouragement. My brother Ryan is a brilliant example. He can encourage anyone. He's just brilliant. And that is people's skill, because people have different skills. And we were praying before the service, and we had this image of the right tool for the right job. And we are the right tool for the right job. We are designed specifically for our purpose that God has placed on our hearts. Now, in this story, I think Mary has a purpose. Mary has lots of purposes, I think. But in this story, I think her purpose is as an example. Apparently, this bottle is really annoying. There we go. I think Mary's purpose in this story is to be an example. Because her action here is literally pouring perfume over Jesus, which is something we can't necessarily do. Because it's not about the action, as I've said, it's about her devotion to Jesus. And I think she's an example of whatever your action is, whatever your purpose or your cause or your passion is, she is an example of how you go through doing that. She doesn't just say thank you to Jesus. She doesn't just pour perfume over Jesus. All of the Gospels say it is an alabaster jar with the essence of nard, which is this really beautiful, precious jar full of this beautiful, precious perfume. It's worth a year's wages, and they all say it's worth a year's wages. She is giving up something. She is being generous with her wealth, in this example, for Jesus. Because when we know our purpose and our cause that we have, we need to give generously. Now, that's not necessarily wealth. That could be time, that could be effort, but we need to be open-minded, like Mary is, to give generously to that cause. I have a favorite bit of this verse, of this passage, which I'm just going to read. I tell you the truth, wherever the good news is preached throughout the world, this woman's deed will be remembered and discussed. I tell you the truth, wherever the good news is preached throughout the world, this woman's deed will be remembered and discussed. And I love that bit. Like, it's brilliant. You know why I think it's brilliant? Because it's Jesus making a promise. Jesus makes a promise here. He says, whenever the good news is preached, they'll talk about this woman. And right now, we are preaching the good news and we are talking about this woman. It is 100% cast iron. Jesus makes a promise. Promises fulfilled, because we are seeing it happening right now. And yes, we have other promises. We haven't received a massive flood. So yes, we know that's a promise God keeps. But arguably, we haven't received a massive flood yet. To skeptics, whereas this one, cast iron, the promise is being fulfilled right now. And I think that's brilliant, because that's such an encouragement. Because God makes so many promises. And we know that each one of those promises are as valid as this one that we are seeing being done right now. However, I just raise a slight problem in this verse, because that's not the only thing Jesus says. Jesus also says, you will not always have me. But he also promises us that he'll always be with us. Like contradiction. But of course, Jesus doesn't contradict himself. And contemporarily speaking, this story takes place fairly soon to Passover. Depending on what gospel you read, Matthew and Mark both place it a couple of days before, and John places it the week beginning Passover. But any respect, it's referenced that Passover is soon. And that means Jesus is soon to be crucified, he's going to die, and he's going to leave the disciples in a physical sense. And in that sense, he is saying that he will not always physically be with them and preparing them for that. That doesn't mean we get away with it as modern readers. Because although God is always with us, there will come a time where you feel like he's not. There come times that I have felt that I am alone, that God is not with me. And that's what God is preparing us for here. Because although God is always with us, we don't always feel like he's with us. There are times when something happens that we feel are so bad, are so horrible, that we are just torn from God, or sometimes we feel we've done things that are so bad that we can't get back to God. And it's at times like that we need to reflect on this verse, because Jesus says, you will not always have me, so make use of the time I am here. And for us, we need to make use of the time when we feel close to God, when we're in a fellowship, when we're at church, when we're at home groups, when we're reading our Bible, times where we feel that God is with us. We need to really pray into that, really rely on that, and just grow those roots. Because if we don't have strong roots of Christian fellowship, the times will come when we feel that we are alone and we will have no one to turn to and we will fall. We need to feel close to other Christians so that when we don't feel close to God, they can help us back to him. I love this verse. This whole passage, I think, is brilliant. Because when you first read it, when I first read it, I just saw this slightly confusing, didn't really make any sense passage about Jesus saying we shouldn't really help the poor. But when you look into it, that's not what it's about. It's Jesus taking an opportunity to stress the importance of our relationship with him, to stress the importance that our actions should be done with meaning for him, and that we all have a purpose that we need to give generously to, that we need to listen for. Because God knows everyone's purpose. I don't know my purpose yet, but God knows my purpose. And the way we find out purpose is we listen to God. This service has been about generosity. But in order to give generously to the cause and the purpose that we're called to, we need to listen first. We need to listen to God and find out what it is he wants us to do, because it's different for each and every one of us. Now, I used that video this morning because we know that he's right. He says, I like to imagine the world is one big machine, and we know that he's right. The world is like one big machine. Because God designs it. God designed the whole world, and he designed everything in it, and he did not design any extra parts. We each have a place to fit. We are each a cog in the machine. We all have our own role to play, because God didn't make people just to be there. He didn't make obsolete things that don't do anything. He knows the number of hairs on your head, and he put that number of hairs on your head for a reason. Because he knows what he wants you to do. But if we're going to do that, if we're going to fulfill that purpose, we need to learn what it is. We need to listen for it. And we need to give generously to it.